Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dateline NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, YouTube, now band.video, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We couldn't do this show without the amazing support of our sponsors. We've got a new one. Helin 951 has been, they've sent me over a couple boxes of their fermented soy drink. And I know what you're thinking. That sounds disgusting. Well, you're right. It doesn't taste all that great. Even they admit it, but they don't want to cut it with added flavoring and things like that because they're worried that it'll compromise the quality. They've been making this for 30 years. It doesn't taste really that bad. I just like to have a little bit of fun with it. It is a highly concentrated soy beverage with a 30-year history of improving health. It's 100% organic. It's non-GMO. It is nitrogen fermented soybeans that are used. They're gathered in Mongolia. It's an amazing product. I've been taking it for a while. Feel great. If you are interested, they have built a page for us for you to just go ahead and take a look, read up on it, watch the videos that they've provided there and see if it's right for you. If it is, pull the trigger, use the promo code macro and save yourself some money. The company is called Helin 951. It is spelled Helin, HALAN951.com/macro. You go there, you'll be able to find everything about it. And like I said, on the way out, use the promo code macro to save yourself some money. What they're doing is pretty amazing. And also we've got got to have a CBD sponsor, a small business in Austin, Texas. True Hemp Science has been fantastic to us. All I asked is if it can make my shoulder feel better, I'm in. Okay. And that's what they said. It'll work. He was right. It works. My shoulder feels fine. I'm in the gym. I have no limitations. It's about time, frankly. I'm thrilled with that. If you are interested in improving your own health, or if you are interested in improving the health of your pet, they have products for that too. If you want to help your pet with separation anxiety or pain relief or anything like that, take a look at the products that they have for that. They have ointments, they have oils, they have all sorts of products. Do this. Go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions, read up on it, see if it's a fit for you. They're making the best hemp-based CBD out there. I'm telling you right now, I've been taking it now for a couple of months and I feel great. It's all I can ask. There's a lot of CBD companies out there, but we like this one a lot. They're a small business. They're based in Austin, Texas. We think they're doing great work, and I know that their products work. So if you are in the market for CBD, take a look at truehempscience.com/macroaggressions and save yourself some money that way. Well, I'll tell you what, a couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure of joining our guest, Ryan Gable, on his show, The Secret Teachings, which you can find on Fringe FM, Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Pacific. We like to talk about all kinds of interesting things, but I love Ryan's work, and I love the topics that he covers. So it's my great pleasure to introduce to you the host of The Secret Teachings, Ryan Gable. How are you, Ryan? Good to see you again.
I'm doing fantastic, Charlie. Thank you for having me on the show. It's always great to talk to you.
It's always great to talk to you because you have this wealth of knowledge about words. And that sounds like, well, we all know about words. Yeah, yeah. But you have this unique skill where you know the origins of the words and you know where they came from and why they came from. And what we're seeing in our best days, of course, but especially during the COVID situation, is we have watched them manipulate the language. We've watched them use words that we think mean one thing and they know mean something else. And we've watched them. I mean, I don't want to get too woo-woo about this whole thing, but it seems to me like they've been putting a spell on us in some cases with this. Let's just start at the beginning. When I was on your show, we talked a little bit about this, but I want to go as deep as we can. Like the beginnings, the origins of words like pharmacy, like where pharmacy come from, and how we have taken one meaning of the word and we've bastardized it and changed it into something totally different. Like let's talk about the importance of words. What are words like, some of the words that have jumped out to you during this whole COVID thing that seem like they've been hijacked by these people?
Well, to start off with two words that we talked about on The Secret Teachings, Charlie, for and with, or words like of and with. You died of COVID or you died with COVID. And this is something that in Australia and now in the United States, the media is slowly beginning to acknowledge that there's a big difference. And not only words, but the way in which those words are spoken, the way that we express ourselves energetically, the way that we have the rising and the lowering of the voice, something called intonation. You know, in certain languages, you can say a word and that word has different meanings based on the tone of your voice. Maybe in English, we don't recognize that so much, but it is true in English as well. Depending on how we say something, the tone of our voice changes the wording or changes the sentence or changes the expression, right? So when we think about words in general, what is a word? A word is a compilation of letters, and letters are symbols. And each symbol, it's like every number, everything in the material world has a certain vibratory frequency. So when you spell a word, when you write a word out, when you write a sentence out, and you have an intention to do something through your will with those words, you are, as they say, casting a spell. When you become a little more creative in the word use and you start to write in a different kind of writing, a different kind of calligraphy, like, or a cursive, and you have an intention to perhaps cause harm or an intention to project your will for some reason, for some purpose on others or something, you write out that verse and you write it as a curse. And then you curse someone or you cast a spell on someone. So the words that we use are composed of this compilation of symbols, which have their own individual vibrations and their own individual meanings. And words are so important, Charlie, as you just said, because a single word can change the definition. A single word can change our perception. A single word can literally change the world. A word like with has changed our definition of what the pandemic is. Dying with COVID-19 is clearly different than dying of COVID-19 or from COVID-19. And one of the things that I noticed recently, Charlie, I don't know if you saw this, there was a video of Rochelle Walensky, the CDC director, right? Mm-hmm. And she was being interviewed on Good Morning America. Did you see that interview she gave?
I did.
Okay. And they're claiming, CNN and other news outlets are claiming, that she was edited. So when she said that 75% of the people that died of COVID-19 had 4.0 additional comorbidities. Did you see that piece that they say that was edited, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I found that wild because CNN suddenly was concerned with context, Charlie. And they said they took Rochelle Walensky out of context. I did a whole show on this because I found it really important in relation to words and how powerful words are. Because what they did was they took the information from ABC. They were accurate in saying that it was taken out of context. And when people in media, people in social media, people in radio started saying, look, Rochelle Walensky at the CDC, she acknowledged that 75% of the people died of other things other than COVID. And CNN was actually right, Charlie. That was taken out of context. But what they don't tell you is that although that statement was relating to a single study that was conducted by, I guess it was the CDC, if you go to the CDC's website, it doesn't relate that study. It relates all the statistical data for COVID-19 deaths. And it actually says on their website that 95% of people died of four additional comorbidities, which is a larger number than what they had originally said, which was 94%. So what they did was they took control not only of the words, but they took control of the narrative. They allowed this information to spread so they could take control of it, alter the narrative, and change people's perception. So now if Charlie Robinson or Ryan Gable or anybody says, hey, people are dying of comorbidities, they refer back to that news clip and say, no, that was taken out of context. So it's not just the words. It's the combination of words and statements, and it's context that matters. All of these things, when we recognize it, just a single word can change our entire perception of reality. And recognizing that and knowing that puts us in charge, makes us, allows us to have the ability to recognize that everything we hear, everything that we see, we taste, we touch, we smell, we interact with, although it's there, it might not have the appropriate context to be as real as we think it is, if that makes sense.
I love that CNN is like, hey, listen, you guys are doing this out of context. We wrote the book on out of context. Yes. We recognize this when we see it. You guys are lying over there.
Suddenly, they're CNN's concerned with context.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're fact checking everything now. All of a sudden, now they're all into that. But that's part of this whole trick. Is it to either dazzle them with statistics or baffle them with bullshit. And we've come across this where we've got these people in positions of power, whether it's the CDC director or Fauci or whoever, coming out and lying with statistics, using them to frame the narrative. And we know that you can make these numbers say whatever you want. If you want to take a smaller sample size or run it over a longer period or a shorter period, you can make these things do whatever they want. But I wonder why now the pivot. I wonder why all of a sudden it seems like maybe the narrative is coming apart a little bit and they're trying to get out in front of it. What's your take on this? Are they trying to jump out in front and steer the ship on this one?
Well, I know that in the UK, did you hear about the Nudge Unit and the SPIB? They've openly acknowledged in the last year that the UK government intentionally used state-sanctioned propaganda to convince people that the virus was more dangerous and deadly than it really was.
And that they did such a good job on it that they scared people too much.
They scared people too much, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I read that article and I thought, and this is something that a lot of people might disagree with me on, but I watched the segment of Dr. Malone on Joe Rogan, mm-hmm. and I heard him say those three blasphemous words, mass formation psychosis. Mm-hmm. And I've watched, politically speaking, I've watched the left deny that that exists, and I've watched the right regurgitate mass formation psychosis. But what I don't see people talking about is this SPI-B. I don't see them talking about the Nudge Unit. I don't see them talking about Yale University sponsoring an NIH study with the U.S. National Library of Medicine, where they literally said, and this was back in July of 2021, actually 2020, this was early on in the pandemic, where they said these are the methods by which to convince people to get a vaccine without showing them the evidence or proof that they're safe and effective. And they gave things like tell people they're not brave. They gave things like tell people that they don't want a robust economy, tell people that they don't believe in science, you know, just the same standard talking points. A couple months ago, the American Medical Association, and we talked about this on the Secret Teachings as well, their winter edition for COVID guidance told people how to convince an audience and how to say certain things and how not to say certain things and how to speak and how to express themselves, how to stand, how to hold their hands in order to project authority, to teach people that this is reality when it's all just a matter of psychology. So if you've got Yale University, you've got the NIH, you've got the American Medical Association, you've got 10 Downing Street, you've got in the UK and in the United States, open acknowledgement of psychological manipulation of reality. I personally think, Charlie, that even those three words, mass formation psychosis, I think that's been used as another form of psychological control to further pit people against each other to prevent them from figuring out what's going on. And I think that goes back to your question of why there seems to perceptually be a pivot to acknowledging these things. I don't think it's really a pivot to acknowledge them. I think it's a loosening of the noose. And we're witnessing a new psychological paradigm being constructed, another new normal within reoccurring new normals. It's a multi-leveled psychological warfare technique, let's call it.
Yeah.
It's a multi-leveled psychological thing that's happening.
And I would suspect that the strategy for psychological manipulation changes based on whether or not the population has been adequately traumatized enough. I would guess that the tactics that you use early on to traumatize everyone might not be the exact same tactics you would use in the later stages where we are now, after people have already been traumatized. And maybe that's the reason why it seems like there's a pivot. Maybe it's just that, like you said, it's just the next phase of the operation where we've already gone through the traumatizing, or what Yuri Bezmenov talked about with the KGB, talking about how you can psychologically destroy someone in 60 days and break their brains, and then you'll never be able to put them back together again. So we've gone through that, and now it seems like the messaging is changing. Now, I guess maybe to the untrained eye, it seems like we're winning, maybe, but I'm not so sure that is the case. I'm always a little bit more suspicious and paranoid, and I think that maybe the trauma-based mind control that has been functioning for the first, almost 2 years now, it seems like now it's being changed. Where do you think they're going to go with this? Are they going to go to limited hangouts where, well, yes, I mean, we have to admit some of these side effects are real, but they're not as, are we going to, is this the answer moving forward? How do you think the media is going to frame this as they start to, as they're losing credibility? It seems like there's a change in narratives. Some people have been vaxxed and they're having regrets. Other people are enthusiastic about it, but we're seeing this change. Are we just at that part in the script where you're supposed to change?
I think so. To sum things up very, very simply, I think that's where we are. I don't believe, and call me a pessimist, but I don't believe that this is some kind of victory. I think that is an ill-conceived notion.
Yeah.
I think these ideas that, the public is figuring it out, so we're all going to win in the end, I think that's just a marketing tool. Mm-hmm. And I think that some people that are truly optimistic that are saying those things because they actually believe them. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being positive, if you will. But I think a lot of people just say those things because, their audiences are scared. Their audiences are terrified. But I also think that if you follow that line of thought, it's not really as scary as some people lead on. I don't think it's that scary, because when we recognize how it's being done, we can recognize the method. We can then, as we recognize it, not be affected by it. And then that puts us in power. And if we always ask questions, even about that whole mass formation psychosis, I personally don't buy that. I think that that was used as another form of mass formation psychosis to pit people against each other. Which maybe people say, well, that proves the point then, it's real. Well, that's not the point. The point is using words like that to convince the public that something isn't real because one person said it the media doesn't like, or convince people that it is real because somebody the media doesn't like said it and you like people the media doesn't like. It's all a matter of persuading people with words. It's all a matter of psychology. It's one giant Milgram experiment is what it is, Charlie. Yeah. And it's based on the Bitterman chart of coercion. It's based on a lot of different things. And again, I think that this is just another change of policy, but the policy that's changing is in line with essentially what amounts to not a literal, but a figurative script. This is just a method, a methodology.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the spark, speaking of a script, or at least something is somewhat close to a script. The SPARS pandemic document that came out in 2017.
Yes.
That talks about, it's a fictional timeline, as you know, 2025 to 2028. But if you take that chunk of time and you overlay it on 2020 and pretend that it actually coincided with that, where we would be in this whole document is at the point where the wheels start to fall off of the narrative. This is the point where the fictional rapper BZ, the public turns on him, the head of the CDC is run out, the Fauci-like character is run out. It starts to dawn on people that the sponge brain that's happening in this fictional document or this fictional scenario can only be occurring because of the rush to market bovine vaccine that they made. So in this fictional document, the people rise up and they start to freak out about 9 months after the vaccines are rolled out in a worldwide coordinated way. That puts us right there, right now, right around that 9 month window where the things start to fall off. That's the one part of this narrative shift that makes me very suspicious, because it is, like it is following a script. Now, that script is supposed to be fictional, and I'm not trying to say that they're following it word by word or month by month, but it's a rough outline, and it seems to have a lot of things that are very similar happening in real life that they role played in this event. So I wonder if they just bake that into the equation, that they know at some point the language has to change, the narrative has to change, the messaging all has to change, it has to shift. We're going to get to this point. It might, you know, in this document, it's the point where everyone figures it out, and then we have to change our messaging. Do you think we're at that point where the change in messaging is just because we're 9 months in after the vaccine, and that's when the change is supposed to happen?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to dismiss that document, because I've read that same thing, and it's pretty incredible, especially because Walensky is now under heavy criticism at the CDC and might end up being on her way out as a result of all this.
Yeah.
And in fact, I wanted to read you this. This is a quote from the New York Times on Tuesday, January 17th, I believe, or the 18th, which is Tuesday, but I think this is from the 17th, Monday. It says the agency's director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, that's the CDC director, has sometimes skipped much of the traditional scientific review process, most recently in shortening the isolation period for infected Americans. It says now the contagious Omicron variant is pushing the CDC into uncharted territory because decisions must be made at a breakneck pace. The agency has issued recommendations based on what once would have been considered insufficient evidence amid growing public concern about how these guidelines affect the economy and education. So they're openly, this is the New York Times, this is the CDC, they're openly acknowledging, and they're not now publishing recommendations, quote unquote, which have never been laws. They're just recommendations and guidelines on information that is not based on the scientific method. They're saying that directly. They've skipped the traditional scientific review process, and they're recommending things based off of, quote, insufficient evidence. Now, I mean, this is something that Charlie, you, myself, and so many others said 2 years ago. There was no basis for lockdowns. There was no basis for a 2-week quarantine. There was no basis for masks. There was no basis for any of this stuff. And we were told we were crazy. 2 years later, after all the trauma, all the terrorism, which is essentially what the UK government has acknowledged, they literally terrorized the public into accepting something that wasn't true. Now in the United States, we're starting to see the same thing happen. We're seeing, as you said, the media is starting to pivot. We're starting to see an acknowledgement that there is insufficient evidence. But I don't think that this, again, is a positive thing. I think that this is all part of the same script, because what's happening is we're seeing open declaration that the Centers for Disease Control not only can recommend things and people think that they're laws, but the CDC can now openly say, and the media can promote it, look, we have insufficient data. We did not go through the scientific review process, but we're still the CDC and you still need to listen to us. So now it's not even based on science. It's scientific irrationality, where we are believing in what authorities say just because they are authorities. We're not even using the scientific process anymore. So this is just another degradation of the social cultural order. This is just another authoritative directive where there isn't even a basis to it. Now it's just, I'm an authority. I'm the CDC. Do exactly what I say. It doesn't have to be based on science or facts.
Yeah, this is wild. It is lining up with look, we've got the airline industry going to the CDC saying, this is going to kill us if you have this quarantine thing. And then it goes away. Like, oh, well, we'll cut it in half. We saw that the social distancing from 6 feet was reduced to 3 feet. So I'm assuming the virus got half as strong. No, it didn't. Oh, okay. So can we admit that we're making this up? See, the problem that I think that these people have, or that they don't recognize, or maybe they just don't care about, is that when they do things like that, it's destroying their credibility, because we're saying, okay, so the 6 feet to 3 feet thing is based on science. And they go, well, you know, it's like more of a suggestion. And you go, so why wasn't it 3 feet all along? Well, because the suggestion was 6 feet. Oh, okay. But now it's 3 feet. Yeah. Well, why isn't it 1 foot? Why isn't it 0 feet? And they go, well, yeah. So you go, okay, these dictates are all written in pencil, clearly, because you guys are changing them all the time. Now I start to go, like, our little conspiratorial brains start going, is this revelation of the method? Are they telling us what they're going to do before they do it? Are we getting to a point where they're saying, well, we told you that we weren't following science. I mean, we told you in 2022 in January, we admitted that we weren't doing that. You guys still took the shots. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Are we getting into this dark arts component where they tell you what they're going to do before they do it?
Well, I think there are so many people, Charlie, that are adamant about psychology and science, but they're so dismissive of real science. I mean, these people that are dismissive of a mass formation psychosis, or what I call mass formation hysteria, they're dismissive of mob psychology and group collective behavior, while they express group collective behavior by not being able to individually think for themselves. And maybe that's the point. With their cultish view of the world, it's hard to see that they lack the ability to be an individual. It's easier to just do what authorities tell them to do. And I mean, I think these are the same kinds of people that declare that scientific exploration, or just science itself, is real. They just, science is real. It's like saying a microscope is real and putting a sign in your front yard that says, microscopes are real. It doesn't really have any meaning to it, but it might sound good to someone who doesn't really think beyond the mundane. Right. I mean, these are the people who question, you know, no authoritative source of science or medicine, but then they reject certain scientists and certain doctors when the data doesn't align with their pre-formed views of reality. So what I really think this is, it's a collection of cognitive dissonance, minds that live by the appeal to authority. And this is now called scientific rationale, where any opposition, even if it's just political opposition, is considered anti-science or pseudoscience, where any question or disagreement, whether that's implied or that's direct, it's met with hostility, it's met with rejection, just like a cult member reacts to the outside world. So yeah, science is real, but science isn't ever changing. So when they say that science is always changing, but it's also real and static, that doesn't make sense. That's not reasonable. That's not rational. That's not logical. Our observations are ever changing, and therefore data is ever changing, but the science itself is not ever changing. It's the process that is adapted to understanding the way the world changes. That could change, but the world itself doesn't change. Yet science itself is a process. So my point is, when you say that science is real, but simultaneously say science can change, I think that's the whole point in the delusional state of cognitive dissonance, is that it doesn't have to make sense. Right. It doesn't have to be reasonable. It doesn't have to be logical. And what this ultimately boils down to is scientific rationale is material science. It's really a form of, and I don't say this from a Christian point of view, it's really a form of Satanism. It's unreasonable, irrational, dangerous, and destructive. It's the antithesis of life. It is the definition of the devil, D-E-V-I-L. It is E-V-I-L. It is L-I-V-E. It is the opposition of living, anything to corrupt and demean that which is beautiful, that which is reasonable, that which is of the divine or the mind of God. This is about keeping people in a bubble that is so small that they can't think even the slightest thought for themselves. This puts people under complete and absolute mental, physical, and psychological servitude. And I think that the CDC acknowledging all this now also implies that the traditional structures of medical and scientific authority also have to come crumbling down so we can build back better on their ashes.
Yeah, it's really fascinating because we're talking about these, it's simultaneously dangerous and horrific that we're living through this, but the writer in me, the radio host in you, we're watching this with fascination because we're getting like a front row seat to a variety of, like you mentioned, Bitterman's chart of coercion. We're seeing Milgram experiments. We're seeing all these psychological operations happening all at once. And it's made me kind of reevaluate or at least dig in a little bit deeper to the psychology of the herd with regard to anything, but we could take animals as an example. There is something about that when you're in the safety of the herd. We've all watched those National Geographic documentaries, right? You get all the wildebeest are going through the low part in the river, and then that alligator, boom, it just grabs one of them and drags it down. And you say, well, look, I'm in the herd. I'm going to play the percentages in order to stay alive. That alligator can't eat all of us. So we're all going to go together in a herd. Now, when somebody pulls away from that herd and goes off on their own, and I'm not talking about a sick animal that needs to go off on its own, but one of the herd goes away, the mentality of the herd is, you better come back here. You're exposing us all to danger. And if you refuse to come back, well, then you are now the enemy. And so what we're seeing is this. We're seeing this play out in real life with us, with actual human beings practicing herd mentality, where they're in that vaccine bubble and we're all safe as long as we take the vaccine, and you leave that herd. And instead of this Plato's allegory of the cave moment where you leave the herd, get the information, come back to the herd and go, guys, I have great news. It's not as bad as we're being told. Everything's going to be fine. These people are making it. These are psychopathic maniacs that are making this out to be a much bigger deal. They want to transform society, but the virus component is not as bad as we're being told. Isn't that great news? The response is, get out of here. You know, those people want that person to leave again. They don't want them any. So are we just watching like a psychological/science experiment being performed on us right now?
I don't know what you want to call it, but I think those words are appropriate. I think that they express adequately what we're experiencing. It is a science experiment. It's certainly a psychological experiment. It's akin to a worldwide Milgram experiment. And there's a lot of other names that you can apply to it. So when I look at it, I think all of those things and more. And I think, you know, at the root core is the whole idea of a virus, right? An invisible enemy. And you asked me about words earlier. And if you look at the origin of the word virus in context with its original meaning, it comes from the Latin, which means slimy liquid poison or noxious substance. It's also defined, of course, you know, as an infective agent nowadays, but in the old days, when someone had a virus, they were poisoned. So when you transferred a virus from person to person in experimentation, you could transfer a slimy liquid from the body, like pus from a pox. You could transfer this noxious substance, blood or pus or something from the body to another person. And in that way, you could say with certainty that the virus jumped from one person to another. One person came into contact with someone who had a virus, and that person was made sick from that virus. But in these cases, proving viral transmission, they were only transferring pus, blood, and other things that came out of the body, that the body was expelling because it was toxic, it was noxious, it was poisonous. So what they would do in the old days, Charlie, before vaccines were invented, is that in order to inoculate somebody, they would take a device and they would cut in a little tiny like razor blade marks on their arm somewhere. And then they would take pus from an open wound on someone who had, let's say, something akin to a smallpox, and they would rub that pus on the open wound. That transferred the virus. Now, whether or not the virus was a particle or simply a poison, if you put poison into the body or some noxious substance into the body, you rub it into an open wound, you ingest it, or it gets absorbed through the skin, that's probably going to make you sick. And you were made sick directly from the virus. But these misconceptions today are based on these old notions and based on the assumption that scientists are telling us something that they know for certain, when in fact, this isn't about a virus not existing. This is about the definition of a virus, just like the definition of contagion, the definition of infection. These words are now used interchangeably, but they're not interchangeable based on their original definitions. And people can say, well, we changed these definitions. We better understand what they mean. Well, not really, because people are still under the impression that a virus transmits from person to person through contact, which, yes, it does in the old sense of the word, if you exchange those bodily fluids. So just based on this simple word like virus that this whole idea, this whole pandemic, all these psychological ops are based on, the word isn't even defined as per its original definition. And if you change a single word like virus to its original definition, this whole thing disappears like that.
Yeah.
Just like if you change a number of other words like infection or contagion, or you go in and you explain that, just like they did in the UK, you read that same article that I did, that they said that the government's insistence that case counts were the most important thing thrust the UK into hysteria and paranoia. But it wasn't as bad as they said it was. And now everything is case counts, and they're changing that narrative too. They're saying cases don't matter like they used to, because it shows the vaccines aren't working to prevent infection. So now they're saying we need to focus on hospitalization rates and people that are really, really sick, as opposed to people who are asymptomatic, because they're trying to shift the narrative to reinforce that vaccines are safe and effective and that they work. So I think some of this, to answer your question, is intentional. I think some of it is, in a sense, scripted, not necessarily literally, but in a sense, maybe in literal terms in some way, shape, or form. But also, I think a lot of this is just people that are taking a guess and changing the rules as they go, which is usually what authoritarians do. They just change the rules as they go and control people by whatever means they can.
And they're not just changing the rules as they go, as you just mentioned, they're changing the words as they go.
And the science.
They're changing the definitions of herd immunity. They're changing what fully vaccinated means. They're playing word games here to get around. They changed death certificates in advance in March of 2020, so that the classification of this could be handled differently. But then they started changing terms, like I said, herd immunity and things like that. This is not. To me, this is not what you do when you're in the middle of an actual pandemic. You worry about all that stuff after you're through and after it's done. Maybe we'll go back and change it. But that's not what happened. They changed the definition of herd immunity just a couple months into this. They changed the recording of death statistics or comorbidities with regard to death within 2 weeks of this. Those changes were already made. So it seems like they went in and had to adjust some of their words in order to make the narrative fit. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. That's exactly what's happening. And then, of course, if you try to show this to people, I mean, I've shown these types of things to people. The CDC's acknowledgement of it was 2.9, now it's 4.0 comorbidities. If I did that before, some people might say, well, that's out of context. You know, maybe let's look at that in detail, but which is fine. You know, that let's look at the evidence and the proof of that. Let's look at the context. But now what they're doing is saying, no, that was taken out of context. Rochelle Walensky was on ABC Good Morning America, and they edited that clip. So they've taken control of a piece of evidence that is sound, that is absolute, that destroys on its face the entire narrative. And they've co-opted that to discredit it. And this is what they've done with all of the other pieces of evidence that we have, all the things that you just mentioned, including the psychological nature and the psychological components of this. Because what people say now about psychology is, well, if they're saying that they need to convince people psychologically rather than through science to take vaccines, that's because people just aren't smart enough to understand the science. So they need to be persuaded to understand it through psychology. Again, like you just said, if this is a pandemic and we're really concerned and people need to be aware of what this vaccine is to protect themselves and their family, don't you think that it might be better to inform them with the science than to psychologically manipulate them to do something they otherwise wouldn't do?
Right.
That sounds like a game to me. That doesn't sound like a public health emergency.
Of course. And then and we see that. And then, of course, we see what Sage did in the UK with the Nudge Unit and the flu crew or whoever, those guys that they brought in that were sort of underneath them. They've worked on like infectious disease. There was like a segment of Sage that was specifically working on this. I kind of jokingly named them the flu crew. And they,
I like that.
They did such a good job that they broke people's brains with this. I wonder if, I never thought they'd, I'll be honest, I never thought they'd come out and actually admit it. So that's the part to me that makes me go, is this turning a little bit? I am still very suspicious, but they're admitting to things that I just assumed they would keep buried forever, stuff like that. So are we now into, so we're moving into a new phase. What kind of programming should we expect from here on out? They've shown us that, according to them, they think that we're too dumb to understand the science. Okay, so they can't use really the science. So now they're using coercion. Are we set to believe that subliminal messaging will be used next? Are we going to find that that they've weaponized stupid people to get them all riled up? I mean, where do you think this next phase can go? If we know that they're trying to manipulate people into feeling a certain way about that has been established. The only question is the tactics of which they're going to use. They've used some already. I'm just wondering what we should be expecting as we get into year two of this,
or the
third year, I guess.
I'm expecting anything and everything. I'm expecting these assaults on language to continue, and I'm expecting that the narrative, more than anything, the narrative is going to slowly and then increasingly in speed change, so that probably within, and I'm not a prediction guy, I'm just saying, generally speaking, this is where we're going. We're seeing the narrative change slowly. It's becoming a faster pace. We're going to see the narrative change so that probably within 6 months to a year, virtually nothing that we were told in the beginning is going to be right. And now everything we're told is going to be based on a new form of science, a new scientific normal, which will continue to change, because when you keep things from the public by coercing the public into believing that they're too stupid to understand them, and you evidence that by changing the definition of words and constantly changing the science, people feel as if, well, I'm not smart enough to understand this. These are the authorities. And although I kind of got that concept before, they change. It's changing again. So I guess I really don't get this. I don't understand this. So I need to rely on authority. It's just a trick that authoritarians and petty tyrants use to control people by keeping things intentionally vague, intentionally ambiguous, and keeping things intentionally ever-changing and confusing. So the mass majority of people realize, I'm not smart enough to comprehend this. I need to go to the authorities. They'll tell me what to do, even if it doesn't make sense. But that's also how cults work.
Right. That is how cults work. And nothing is too minute in terms of a tactic used to control people. One of the things that I learned about years ago, and I don't know a ton about it, but I'm sure you do, and especially because you're into these things, and you also have a deep background in radio, and that is that change in frequency that went from 432 to 440 as a method to get into a vibrational, well, get out of vibrational resonance with a certain sound and change it to that. Do you know the story behind that? I've heard that the Rockefellers were involved.
The Rockefellers sponsored the research into that, I believe, from what I've heard, that the Rockefellers paid for research into that, and they changed the internationally agreed upon, like the musical frequencies that were used. And I honestly don't know a lot about that off the top of my head. But I do know that what you're saying, generally speaking, it was an intentionally conducted thing, if you will, an operation to literally change the frequencies that we interact with through entertainment, through music, in order to alter basically brain chemistry. which is in my opinion, I'm not sure if this is also something you can validate, but I'd imagine that's also why we switched from analog to digital television. I'd imagine that's part of the process of switching to new forms of quote unquote G technology, because it's a matter of changing and altering the frequencies. It's the process of turning the heat up of the water on the stove with the frog in it, like Jordan Maxwell used to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. And now 6G isn't even a generational technology. It's just a digital sub-reality. So we're increasing the psychological stress. We're increasing the terrorism and the trauma globally to encourage and urge people to take the easy way out, which is just to plug into this artificial paradigm.
That's where I was going with this, is that how much of this is just a herding technique to get everybody into the metaverse, the digital world, your life here is filled with stress and anxiety and viruses and vaccines. Maybe Russia's going to blow you up with a nuclear bomb and your wife's cheating on you and all these things. But in the metaverse, you can be whoever you want. You can be the person that you thought you were going to be when you were in high school, but you never developed into. You can buy a plot of land next to Snoop Dogg. Did you know that in Snoop World, you can, if you've got $400,000, you can do that. I mean, are they just trying to corral us into a paddock and lock us away so that they can run this world without any interference from us?
I think it's part of an overall calling process. And see, when we use words like calling, when we use words like eugenics, when we use words like Satanism, when we use words like mass formation psychosis, there develops, I think, Charlie, this opposition and this promotional element of society. People will use those words to express how they feel without really defining the words and without really understanding the basis or the origin of the words or what those things mean and imply. And then there are people that will just be in opposition and say, none of that stuff exists. None of that stuff is real. Just again, with the mass formation psychosis. So whether it's mass formation psychosis or it's something like the revelation of the method through Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and knowing what they were doing, not just with kids, but with breeding babies with women with Epstein's sperm. It's in the USA Today, in the New York Times, to create a race of super Epsteins, literally. And he was invested in cryogenics and artificial intelligence and robots and things like that as well. What happens, I think, is what we need to do is we need to be objective about everything that we see, because a lot of the times what we consider to be positive or consider to be us winning or consider to be a doctor or a scientist, someone who becomes really popular, who's a big name in the so-called conspiracy or alternative community, a lot of times I think that's just counterintelligence. I think that's Pizzagate. I think that's QAnon. I think those are the same kind of a counterintelligence, Charlie, that Black Lives Matter and Antifa are. They're radicalized groups on one side or the other that are meant to divert our attention from things that we should actually be focused on. And I don't mean that in some ambiguous, vague way. I just mean that in terms of what we are confronted with on a daily basis. Rather than picking a side and feeling like we're winning, we need to realize that that's part of the psychological game as well. Picking a side is part of the game. Don't pick a side. And I think this also, unfortunately, filters over into this concept of atheism, anarchy, and Satanism, which is big and popular today. People say, we don't like corporations. We don't like institutional religion. We're disenfranchised by it. We don't like spirituality. We've been ripped off and harmed and traumatized by the church and these big institutions and governments. We want to overthrow the system. But ultimately, those people that believe in that, those institutions, the Satanic Temple, et cetera, they're propped up by and they prop up corporations and big banks and governments. They prop up a form of scientific, what I call irrationality, that literally proposes that the scientific method can be used to explain away the spiritual world. When in fact, the scientific process used to be based on explaining the physical world as an expression of the spirit world. So they're disconnecting the spirit and the soul. And why I call this ultimately satanic, and which is why I also don't think we should use that word and throw that word around like a lot of people do, particularly conservative Christians, is because Satanism as a form of belief, or what we might call devil worship, is an inversion of life. So when people promise, technocrats, you know, the Elon Musks, the Ray Kurzweils, when they promise that we can obtain everlasting physical life, Charlie, we can obtain the elixir, the technological elixir of life and live forever, ever. It sounds good because we don't actually have to have faith in anything. We don't have to do anything to acquire it. So we can just obtain that everlasting life. It's the deal that we make with the devil, which at the end of the day means that our soul is going to be eternally immersed in a physical world and confined to this crystallized material reality. So that is essentially the killing of the spirit and the trading of one's souls for material wealth, material gain, material life, et cetera, which won't even be that great because you'll be plugged into a sub-reality within ultimately a sub-reality. So I guess my point to all of this is the scientific rationale and the psychology urging and ushering and herding us into this scientific, technological, technocratic, transhumanist domain is really the Faustian agreement with the devil in a literal sense, because our soul is being traded for these things in the process. That, I think, is what is actually satanic about it, not just because there's a Baphomet statue. It's more philosophical and more symbolic than that.
I feel like we're, you know how like when you're a minor, you're not allowed to enter into a legally binding contract because you're just, I feel like we are unqualified to enter into these contracts with these people that are trying to convince you to, like, you know, like the Island Boys, you know, those two guys, that those two kids that were on Instagram rapping about everything. They look like sea monkeys. Yeah. Those guys, they came out and like a week after they were like mega viral. One of the guys came out and said, yo, man, I sold my soul. I don't feel good. I feel bad. I shouldn't have done it. I was wanting money and all this stuff, and I sold my soul. And I'm watching this going, that looks like a guy that actually did sell his soul. Like, he looked completely hollow and empty on the inside. He looked like he just read the fine print of the contract that he signed.
And he already signed it in blood.
Oh, right. He signed it in blood in the altar in the record studio, right?
Well, okay. Yeah, some of the old grimoires say that the best way to reverse that contract is to spit three times in the name of the devil, and then you're released from your contract. It'll appear on your chest while you're sleeping. So I mean, you just spit three times, but you know,
okay.
I don't think it's that simple.
Get yourself a good lawyer.
Yeah, you need to get a really good lawyer. A lot of them have residence probably in hell anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is this. Now I think it's all kind of like, you know, for some people, it's like, well, you're talking about the metaverse and you're talking about transhumanism and all this. That's in the future and everything. Well, is it really, though? Because the fourth industrial revolution that the World Economic Forum is putting forth, that fourth industrial revolution component is the blending of man with machine. That is transhumanism. They've got a benchmark set for 2030. It looks like they're ahead of schedule on some components of this. So, should we not be paying attention to the fact that they are actively pushing this transhumanism agenda, that maybe this might be the most important component for us to pay attention to?
I think that it is probably one of the, if not the most important components, Charlie, because what it is the end game. It is the merging of man with not necessarily just animals, like they're doing with hybrid chimera experiments, or even insects for that matter, and saying it's all about organ transplants and things like that. This is about merging man with machines, in the sense that you don't have the option to live your life in a physical capacity. You are plugged into, literally or figuratively, a computer system. Your consciousness or your awareness, not really your consciousness, I don't think, it's your personality in numbers and digits that are plugged into a computer that exists in a digital world, and your body essentially becomes useless. It's the replication of you, which is what Samsung says, in a digital environment that will be the new world once the 6G is installed and once the 6G is operational, being run by machines. So yes, I think transhumanism is the end goal, not in a vague sense, not just in a general sense. Transhumanism in the sense that human beings merged with machines and merged with technology to the extent that the soul becomes extinguished. And I think that's why this is the ultimate Faustian agreement. Not to mention, Charlie, that the fourth industrial revolution really is kicking off in 2022 with the Great Reset, which is the great King Set of ancient Egypt, the king of chaos, King Set, King Seth. And 2022 is the year of the tiger, which the Chinese see as the king of the jungle, if you will, like our lion. And the tiger comes from Ursa Major, the bear, which is also Arthur, King Arthur, the once and future king, the rise of the Antichrist, the return of King Arthur, the return of Christ. The year of the tiger, which the tiger comes from Ursa Major, the tiger lives 1,000 years, is the year of the 1,000-year Reich, right? So the 1,000-year Reich, the fourth industrial revolution, which fourth is Reich. Also the fourth Reich rising. So there you get the spiritual, is esoteric and occult aspects of this as well. So those are as important, if not more important than the physical components, because they show you that there is an agenda or a plan or a script, a ceremony, a ritual being carried out in the undercurrent of what happens in the news every day. What happens, you know, visually around you every day. There's something that's more underlying and an undercurrent that is expressing through the physical these things.
It is so tempting to be dismissive of that too, you know, to be like, well, yes. There's not, you know, this, what we see in the news, what we see is this is the point of it. This is what it's all about. And maybe it is about that to an extent, but I think people can be dismissive of the esoteric component of this at their own peril, because there's a parallel storyline going on here. And I know that, like, a lot of people say, well, that stuff's, it's hocus pocus. It doesn't matter. Fine. It doesn't matter to you. And it might not even matter so much to me, but it matters to them. And because it matters to them, we have to pay attention to it, because they are following these things and always have. There's an undercurrent. There's another layer to this that doesn't get talked about in the news and doesn't get talked about by the pundits on TV or anything like that, but that these people are following some bigger storyline, maybe even galactic storylines that are running through all of this. Why should we have to pay attention to this, correct? Like, I mean, would we be doing ourselves a disservice if we just said, forget about that stuff. That stuff is minor. That's of some minor interest, but probably not the key to it all. Should we be, you know, actively paying attention?
I think we should. I mean, everybody's different because everybody has a different part to play. But when I read that Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly, or Handgun Kelly, whatever his name is, they exchanged blood when they got engaged. And a lot of people overlook that and say, well, that's just publicity. That's just a publicity stunt. Or maybe they did that, but, you know, it's just a little drink of blood off the finger or something. It wasn't like they poured a quart or a pint of their own blood out and drank it. Right. And it's like, well, it doesn't really matter one way or another what you think, because that's not the first time that's happened. Megan Fox gave Machine Gun Kelly a vial of her own blood last year. You might think, okay, that's just a celebrity couple. They're doing what they want to do. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, there's nothing wrong with it, but that's something I feel like you should do in your bedroom. That's something you do in private. Why do you tell people about that? What kind of publicity stunt, you know, informs the public that you're drinking the blood of your fiance? That's something that the general public doesn't really respond well to, whether they're Christian or otherwise. That's something that people look at and say, well, that's really weird. That's kind of disturbing. Like, what representative, what agent goes to Megan Fox and is like, okay, you really want to get some attention, tell people you drank the blood of Handgun Kelly, and people will be all over that. To me, that doesn't make any sense, Charlie, but it's not the only time that's happened. Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton did the exact same thing. Yeah. They wore vials of each other's blood, right? One of the Kardashians did this with her fiance. They had little vials, medical grade vials of each other's blood labeled with their names. Julia Fox, an Italian American actress, she did something similar. She actually painted these, I think they were like white silk canvases with syringes of her own blood, and not like a butterfly or a flower. She painted a naked girl being executed or hanged with her own blood. And Elon Musk's girlfriend, she goes by the name of Grimes. She did an art show. I think it was in 2020, where she literally was selling documents that she called contracts that she had signed in the process of selling her soul. And these art shows that really aren't art shows, it's basically blood magic and ritual ceremony sold as a piece of art, are the same types of things that Marina Abramović was doing with Lady Gaga. Mm-hmm. They are the same types of things that Abramović was doing with Tony and John Podesta. And see, the thing is, I think when you bring up something like that, people immediately go, Pizzagate. It was Pizzagate. No, I think that's the PSYOP. That's the counterintelligence. Regardless of that, because it's easy to dismiss what Abramovich and Gaga and all these other people like the Podestas and the Clintons are doing, Pizzagate is meant to discredit that. But if you get rid of Pizzagate and recognize its counterintelligence, whether you're on the right or left, you realize, oh, they're still doing these things. Call it whatever you want. They're proud of it. They do it as an art show. They do it as an expression of their religion. So if you have all these celebrities, Charlie, including people like Peter Thiel, who is interested in using the blood of young people to rejuvenate his body.
Ambrosia
in California. That's right. $8,000 per blood transfusion to start out with. You got some college or high school kids with a cookie and a juice giving their blood to Peter Thiel. You have companies like Bite Lab. I don't know if you've heard about Bite Lab, where celebrities like James Franco and Jennifer Lawrence and Ellen DeGeneres, not DeGeneres, I call her Ellen DeGeneres.
You got it right.
They give up samples of their DNA and these companies clone them and turn them into meat that people can buy and consume. You've got a society and a culture that is obsessed, I think, artificially with zombies that consume flesh, with vampires that drink blood, from Twilight to the Santa Clara diet. And the Barrymore family, Drew Barrymore, that is a very old Hollywood family. They're literally vampires. They're just not the Nosferatu vampires. They literally drink blood and eat flesh. Look at Armie Hammer, the actor. Mm-hmm. And Armie Hammer, he's into cannibalism. He's in big trouble. And it's not just because he quote unquote raped some women. I think that's part of the Me Too movement. What they're not focusing on is the guy was literally interested in cannibalism and not for sexual purposes, although that's how they're trying to spin it. This is the religion of the Hollywood celebrity. And I think that this is expressed in a more disturbing way, if it couldn't be more disturbing. I think this makes it more disturbing. It has nothing to do with blood or cannibalism. It has to do with aliens. You've got Demi Lovato, Jenny McCartney, and a bunch of others that are literally dealing with Stephen Greer and people like Corey Good, and they're trying to summon aliens. And they're not even doing it, Charlie, for, you know, fame. They're not doing it for wealth. They're doing it because it's fun. In the good old days, you would make a deal with the devil for something, a hot girlfriend. You'd make a deal with the devil for some cash. Now they're just doing it because it's fun. And teaching kids how to summon demons with the Children's Book of Demons, showing kids pedophilic and homosexual pornography in classes, teaching kids to eat babies in Georgia at a school because they say that the climate is out of control. This is how we can feed the world. All of this stuff is the true religion of the occult, quote unquote, elite that run the planet and have for thousands of years. And they are now making their religion public, and they're bringing all the additional souls into that religion in order to obtain, in my view, kind of like what Jack Sparrow did on Pirates of the Caribbean. When his soul was due, he didn't want his soul to be due, so he had to exchange 100 other souls for his soul. And I think that's what a lot of these people are doing. They're trying to find others to exchange for their soul because they know that their time is up.
George Soros is running out of time. Where can people find your books, Ryan?
They can find them at thesecretteachings.info. So just www.thesecretteachings.info. You'll find Food Philosophy, The Technological Elixir, which is about artificial intelligence, UFOs, and a bunch of other stuff, and Occult Arcana, which is, I would call it an unbiased view of the esoteric and the occult. I'm not trying to prove or to suggest that you should believe one thing or another. It's just an overall encyclopedia of the esoteric and the occult. It's on thesecretteachings.info.
You guys can catch Ryan Gable Monday through Friday at 11 o'clock at night Pacific time on Fringe FM. You can catch Macroaggressions on Fringe FM too. We're on Mondays and Fridays as well. We're great to be there. Ryan, you are the best. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate all of your insight into this.
I appreciate it, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me on.
And if you like this episode and you want to take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family, we certainly do appreciate it. That's how the show grows. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, and we will talk to you soon.